From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is a special update on the Exxon Valdez oil spill disaster in Prince William Sound. I'm Corey Flintoff. The Exxon disaster has claimed its first whale. The animal apparently died yesterday in Montague Strait. Peter Kenyon has more.
While half a dozen reporters and photographers were out walking beaches on night in Green Island surveying the oil damage, the report came in over the DEC radio. Sunday's dead included the first whale to fall victim to the oil spill.
One dead whale, one dead deer, three dead fish, and one dead octopus. And it's Roger.
Now, the Department of Fish and Game confirmed the kill and said the baleen whale, which could be either a gray whale or a right whale, had been towed to the north end of Latouche Island for study by scientists. Meanwhile, fishermen and other cleanup workers walked the shorelines, collecting dead birds and sea otters. State officials said this morning that all bodies are being frozen for the moment until a suitable disposal system can be put in place. For APRN in Valdez, I'm Peter Kenyon.
Phase one of the beach cleanup began today in Prince William Sound. Bass Bay on Naked Island has been targeted for crews to test different ways to get the oil off the beaches. Bill Lamoureux of the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Depending on the sensitivity of the area, they're going to try combinations of water washing, both low pressure, cold water washing, and in some areas some high pressure, warm water, or hot water washing. Now it's more or less an experimental phase at this time to find out what techniques work best with the for the removal of the oil while trying to minimize other environmental impacts at the same time. So we hope to get some results back after a couple days of this test period.
Lamoureux adds that the Alaska ferry Aurora will leave Sawmill Bay, where fishermen are fighting to keep the oil away from the San Juan hatchery. The Aurora will take on more supplies in Valdez, then head to Herring Bay, where crews will begin recovering oil from the water.
There's still a lot of oil out there, and that bay has been a source of bleed-off, essentially, going back out into the open water. So until that area is mopped up, it's going to be a continuing source of problems down in along the west shore of Naked Island.
Lamoureux says there were reports that, as of last night, the tanker Exxon Valdez hadn't been surrounded with a protective boom. It's now moored at Outside Bay on Naked Island. Exxon official Monty Taylor said this afternoon that the company couldn't confirm reports that a boom was hung up on the bow of the vessel. Taylor did say that it was Exxon's intent to have the tanker surrounded with boom in case any more oil should leak out. New allegations have surfaced about the captain of the Exxon Valdez and his history of drinking on the job. A Boston Globe story yesterday quotes a former second mate who served under Captain Joseph Hazelwood and charged that the skipper was frequently drunk and failed to follow regulations. Bruce Amaro is suing Exxon in New York State Court on charges that Hazelwood and other superior officers harassed him. The former mate, who was employed by Exxon for 8 years, is asking more than $2 million in damages. The Boston Globe story says that in a pretrial deposition given 18 months ago, Amaro said Hazelwood constantly appeared to be intoxicated on the job and that he frequently held drinking parties in his cabin on board ship. Amaro added that there was a joke in the Exxon fleet to the effect that the ship was run by Captain Hazelwood and his chief mate, Jack Daniels. Hazelwood, 42, wasn't on the bridge of the Exxon Valdez when it ran aground on March 24th, spilling more than 10 million gallons of crude oil. Exxon has given Cordova District Fishermen United $250,000 to defray costs of fighting the oil spill. The money will be used to pay the cost of items ranging from boom to boat fuel. Claire Richardson reports that in response to Cordova's demands, a community liaison officer hired by Exxon will set up camp there and in several other towns.
Valdez has received a lot of attention internationally since the Good Friday oil spill, and the residents of Cordova feel isolated from aid, attention, and a future economic recovery.
We don't have a pipeline in Cordova. We don't even have a road for tourists to drive in on, and judging from Exxon's multi-million-dollar ad campaign apologizing to Valdez and not Cordovans, we don't even have respect. But but we do have fish. And it is the threat of losing our fish that scared us half to death.
R.J. Kupchak was one of a half dozen residents who spoke Saturday in Valdez. Like others, he's frustrated by the way Cordova has been treated. On Friday, Exxon said they had more than 100 boats in its Exxon Navy. But Michelle Hahn O'Leary with Cordova Fishermen United says many of those boats were working independent of Exxon.
There are currently 64 seiners and 15 gill netters out on the Sound working now on this spill. They aren't all hired by Exxon because Exxon never took the time to get a proper contract out to any of them. Our own fishermen have chased Exxon from Valdez to Cordova and back again, tracking down a contract and flying it out to our fishermen personally yesterday so that they could be officially on this spill.
Kupchak outlined several requests for Exxon.
Number one, Exxon should establish immediately a command center in Cordova, not a liaison office, a command center in Cordova, staffed by Exxon corporate employees so that they can talk with us. And not next week, but now. Exxon brags about 250 staff people in Valdez, and it wouldn't hurt to put some of those people in Cordova. Again, we're ready to help. We're simply waiting for a call so we can have a date. Exxon should conduct a daily town hall meeting with our citizens to personally tell us the status of the spill cleanup efforts, the damage, claim information, and other mitigating programs they hope to establish, because that's all we hear from them is how they hope to do this and that. Exxon should expedite advance payment of claims to individuals and companies that have suffered from the spill. These advance payments should in no way represent a final settlement to our people, nor should they eliminate the opportunity for our people to file a compensatory damage claim in the future. The town is suffering a major cash flow problem at this time. It should be fixed. Our herring season has been destroyed, and we have received no money in our town to help offset that. Nothing.
But by late yesterday, a check for $250,000 was received by CDFU. A Cordova town meeting is taking place this afternoon to discuss the latest information on the spill and cleanup effort. Exxon officials add DJ Moon left for Cordova today and will be a community liaison for the fishing port. Cordova was ranked ninth in size of U.S. fishing ports in 1987 based on the value of various fisheries. The herring fishery, worth an estimated $12 million, was canceled last week because of the oil spill. In Valdez, I'm Claire Richardson.
Homer's oil spill response team convened for the second day today, mapping out plans for the Lower Cook Inlet and Kachemak Bay area. Latest reports this afternoon put the oil 10 to 15 miles south of Gore Point. Laura Wilkie reports from Homer on the team's top priorities.
Gathering information on the coastline of the Lower Cook Inlet area and boom placement strategies topped the list at this morning's emergency response team briefing. Joe Stamm is in charge of the Homer unit. He says a survey of the coastline will give them an idea of what was there before the oil strikes. An aerial survey has been completed, and today, teams are out on the beaches.
They're looking at populations of birds, populations of mammals, haul-out areas for the sea lions, otters, that kind of thing. The intertidal people are looking at what's there in the tide pools on the intertidal areas. So it's just a quick inventory, but a fairly concise inventory of what's actually there at this point in time.
The survey will cover the area from Gore Point up to Anchor Point, including Kachemak Bay. Eventually, this team will move across Cook Inlet and survey the Katmai National Park area. Boom equipment arrived this morning to protect the Tutka Bay salmon hatchery, which is the top priority for setting booms in the Kachemak Bay area. The plan is to triple boom the hatchery. Setting booms to help protect the villages of Port Graham and English Bay is also high up on the priority list. But fish and game biologist Tom Schrader says that protecting these areas is an iffy business.
One of the things we found out yesterday is that when we did a reconnaissance flight of these areas, most of the areas that we had in mind to protect, we are not going to be able to protect with booms. Normally, when you get tidal currents greater than 1 knot, the boom will flag. The oil you'll create a vortex in front of the boom, and it will just suck the oil underneath. And this is something that has been told to everybody since day one, but you still try and deploy boom anyway to see if you can protect something.
Officials say that weather conditions and wave action make it extremely difficult to pinpoint the exact location of the leading edge of the slick, and predicting exactly what it will do is equally difficult. Officials today called wind direction predictions favorable as far as keeping the oil slick out at sea, but that could change at any time. Reporting from Homer, I'm Laura Wilkie.
As Kodiak prepares for the possibility of oil reaching its shores, the most immediate tasks have been taken care of. As Charlene Parent reports, the community's using this lull in the action to think about what may happen in the long run.
Today's meeting of Kodiak's Emergency Committee, Borough Mayor Jerome Selby reported a Navy skimmer is in town and the crew to operate it will arrive Monday. Exxon now has a permanent representative in Kodiak to expedite materials and equipment, and Exxon has also brought a number of oil spill specialists in to advise on boom deployment. 9,000 feet of boom has already been deployed on a fog knack.
We do have boom in place at Katoy, Paul's, and Portage Bay on Fog Knack Island. We have the critical areas identified now in from the villages, and we'll be looking at that and kind of changing the modality now from the three bays that we do have boom to a kind of approach of fighting the thing from the north to the south on the island, as assuming oil would flow in that general direction.
To help Kodiak prepare for the oil, City Finance Director Roy Diebel and fisherman Steve Penn were sent to Cordova to observe operations there. The two were connected by teleconference to today's meeting. Penn warned that no amount of preparation can save the whole island if the oil hits.
The slick is immense. So you have to kind of realize that all the equipment that you do have is not going to be enough, but you have to be willing to divert this stuff into areas that you're willing to sacrifice. And that was a very frustrating part for this community over here, like I'm sure it would be for Kodiak, but it's part of the ballgame, I guess.
Rather than wait for the oil to hit, some people say efforts should be made to stop the oil while it's still in the Gulf of Alaska. Coast Guard Commander Blackett says the Coast Guard has done some experiments to try and disperse the oil in open water.
I thought we decided not to use dispersants, but I guess we're restudying that on the Sheen. They have not been used yet, to my knowledge. We did use some seine-type material to try to break up some of this heavier concentrations of oil with some success yesterday. It broke it up into much smaller little pieces, and they did not reform. So that has been done. I think we've said again and again that we just don't have something that's going to nicely suck this stuff up 200 miles offshore, though. You don't have a skimmer that's going to work out in the ocean, open ocean.
So the plan for now is to wait for the oil and then try to deal with it. The emergency committee is also looking at the long term. Kodiak may be looking at months of monitoring the oil flushing out of Prince William Sound.
That is a possibility, and we just began yesterday, late yesterday afternoon, to discuss time frame. At the moment, we've of course been focusing on getting what we've got out there and trying to get more material here, and that's been kind of what's used up most of our time in the last couple of days. But we realize that there is a good chance, at least in our view, that this could come at us slowly over many months.
Reporting from Kodiak, I'm Charlene Parent.
And that's our report on the Exxon disaster for this Sunday, the 9th of April.
This special coverage is made possible by contributions from concerned Alaskan listeners and by the member stations of the Alaska Public Radio Network.